Governor's Highway Safety Association does work few people could argue with, advocating for public policies that support traffic safety nationwide, and ordinarily it hums along trying to fulfill that mission without a whole lot of media attention. This summer, though, it is grabbing headlines because of a study that projects that when all the data are in, it will show that more than 7,500 pedestrians were killed by motor vehicles last year. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. The car versus pedestrian death rate is the worst this country has seen since 1981 in terms of raw numbers. But why exactly? Why did we make progress toward reducing the risks to people walking to get where they were going, only to see those hazards rise dramatically? And more important, what will it take to make transportation safer, not only for motorists and passengers, but for those on foot with whom they are supposed to be sharing the roads? Maren Kogan is senior correspondent at Vox, where you can find her report, Why Pedestrian Deaths in the U.S. Are at a 40-Year High. Maren, welcome back to Think.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
It is so surprising to me that things got so much worse during the pandemic. There was a 13% increase in deaths between 2020 and 21, and that capped off an 11-year run of increases?
That's right. So this problem has really been going on in the United States for over 10 years now. The pandemic, unfortunately, sort of turbocharged this trend. So between 2010 and 2021, the GHSA says pedestrian fatalities have increased 77%. A lot of that increase has just happened in the last few years of the pandemic when these pedestrian fatalities, which were already rising steadily, started sort of skyrocketing, unfortunately.
So why would things get worse during a time when, for months on end, roads were noticeably emptier than they had been as so many more people were working and going to school from home?
That's a really great question, and there isn't one easy answer to give, but the most sort of compelling theory about this is the idea that the pandemic and people staying at home really upended the usual traffic patterns. So in the past, where you might have had a lot of congestion slowing all the traffic down, this sort of upending of the traffic patterns meant that the roads were more open and empty, and it allowed people who were on them to drive much more dangerously and a lot faster. There's also some thought that, you know, there were a lot of sort of increased personal and mental health crises during the pandemic, perhaps that increased reckless driving, drunk driving, that sort of thing, because drunk driving is a piece of this too. It's a real problem in this country. It's not the only explanation, but it's both of those are, I think, a big part of it. The problem is, Chris, what we're seeing is that the traffic patterns have more or less normalized and the pedestrian fatalities are continuing to go up. So it can't explain everything that's going on. We have to take a bigger look at the sort of broader trend over the last 10 years or so.
Well, another recent phenomenon that we have to consider is Black Lives Matter, which cast a critical eye on over-policing that exists within many communities of color in this country. We know there are lots of, you know, police-civilian encounters that go wrong that start with traffic stops. So now in many places, what, police just aren't making all that many traffic stops?
Yeah, so this isn't really proven by hard data, so I want to caveat with that. There haven't been studies about what has gone on since Black Lives Matter, but I'd be curious to see what you're seeing, to hear what you're seeing, and certainly I see this in Washington, D.C., where I live. There's been a lot of criticism and attention to the sort of racially unjust, inequitable traffic enforcement that has been practice in many parts of this country for years now. The flip side of that is I think there's been very justifiable critique of those practices. It almost seems as though in certain places the police have pulled back and have said, okay, we're not going to do traffic enforcement anymore. And so it's leading to, at least in my community, from what I can see, a sort of environment where people are driving very quickly and recklessly because they sort of understand that there won't be anyone pulling them over or giving them a ticket for it.
Yeah, like who's going to stop me from behaving this way?
Pretty much. And I think you see people running red lights, you see people running stop signs. And on the one hand, it's almost rational behavior, you know, because they understand that there won't be any consequences. I think the challenge now is going to be finding this middle ground. We've had this this police traffic enforcement that has been unjust and unfair for many Americans, but we also have a real safety issue, and that's an equity issue too. So we need to look at ways to really just focus on the safety, focus on the people who are driving recklessly, who are driving drunk, and make sure that we can, you know, make sure that the roads are safer for everyone.
It's also a little surprising, Maren, that this problem is especially serious in the United States. People in Europe seem to be more likely to move around their cities on foot, but they're having fewer deadly encounters with cars these days, right?
That's right. So we are really the outlier among our peer nations. And, you know, I should say, too, it's not because people will say, oh, it's Europe. You know, they have different density. They have older infrastructure. Our country is built around cars. And that is true to some extent. But even a place like Canada, just to the north of us, is seeing their pedestrian fatality rates go down. We are really standing alone in terms of our pedestrian fatality rates rising. I think a lot of that does have to do with a road design that in many parts of the country is very straight, flat, wide open, lots of lanes, encourages people to drive very quickly when there isn't peak traffic congestion. The other thing that we have that Europe doesn't have are cars and vehicles that are getting bigger and heavier. And those bigger, heavier SUVs and trucks are vastly more deadly to pedestrians than smaller cars are.
Yeah, this is so interesting. Many people have like celebrated the ongoing conversion of the U.S. auto fleet to more and more electric cars. These are clearly better for the environment than gas-powered vehicles. They're also much heavier than gas-powered vehicles.
Yeah, and we're going to need to have a conversation about this because electric is great, right? Like you said, it's much better for the environment. And I think, you know, to the extent that people want to drive something that is better for the environment, that's wonderful. But we do need to acknowledge that they are much heavier, and making them heavier makes them much more deadly to pedestrians. And then at the same time, if we're doing these in SUVs and trucks and other large vehicles, the sheer weight that is added for electric vehicles is pretty astonishing. And that's going to basically only increase the pedestrian fatality crisis unless we find ways to mitigate those risks.
Do you know why they're heavier? Is it the weight of the battery is just more than the weight of a tank of liquid gas?
That's exactly right. Mm. Yep. The weight of the battery adds significant weight. That's right. Yep.
So you mentioned that, you know, we have a country kind of built for and around cars. What have you learned about how the U.S. got this system of roads we have with all the construction that took place specifically after World War II?
Yeah. So in the years after World War II, we built up the federal highway system and we developed all of these new communities across the country with the idea being that people would want to drive to the city to go to work. They'd come home, they'd have their yard, they'd have their room to sort of stretch out and play and be with their family. And so we built a lot of these sort of big arterial roads so people could get to and from those places very quickly. What happened at the same time was that a bunch of local planners and county and regional officials approved commercial development along those roads. And so that's how we end up with this thing. You know, you see it in any suburb, it's sprawl, right? Just those long roads with lots of lanes and there's commercial developments on either side. That's created real challenges for people trying to walk that space. I think the other thing that has been happening in recent years is that you've had this sort of suburbanization of poverty. So people who are low income, who can't afford, they're being pushed out of the city, right? Are moving further and further out because that's where the affordable housing is. Well, let's say the worst happens and someone loses access to their car or loses access to their home. All of a sudden they're walking along the sides of these roads that have all of these high speed vehicles on either side of them. That's incredibly dangerous. Those roads really weren't built for pedestrians. And so you're seeing a lot of interactions where people are maybe trying to run across the street because there's no crosswalk. Maybe they're walking at night where there's poor lighting. And that's where you end up with a lot of these situations where people are getting killed, unfortunately.
I've been in those situations in place, especially on vacation, like where maybe I don't have a rental car, but I'm in a place. And even when these wide roads with commercial strip centers on either side technically have like a sidewalk, it does not feel safe to walk there when cars are speeding by at 50 or 60 miles an hour.
That's exactly right. And, you know, Chris, when I came on last year, we talked about my deadliest road in America story. Mm-hmm. And it was just one of these. It was exactly one of these roads in Florida. And I think I told you I drove it once and then I walked it to go to dinner one night. And the difference between walking and driving You could just feel there were sidewalks, right? But it was so hostile to walk. At one point, I waited at a crosswalk for so long, and the light just never even changed. I don't think it was even working. So it felt very unfriendly, and you can see why people take these risks. It's like I could walk a mile to try to find a crosswalk or just run across the street. Then again, when I was driving, you couldn't have told me it was unsafe. As a driver, it felt wonderful, and I just wanted to drive. I noticed myself driving faster because it was just so wide open. That's where we get there are these sort of subtle cues that let you know whether you're driving or walking, whether this road was designed to be safe for you or not.
What you're talking about here is these motorways that traffic engineer Charles Marone dubbed Stroads. The word means what it sounds like, right? It's a street combined with a road. But in practice, streets and roads historically have had different forms and different functions.
Yeah, that's right. And I love this term because I think it really helps you conceptualize what we're talking about here. So Marone would say that a street is a place where people live, they shop, they go to restaurants. We all have these in our communities, right? Places where you go out to eat, where you go walk around with your family, you shop, you live. And those streets, he says, need to have slower traffic for two reasons. So one, so that if a car is driving through, they're able to pull over and stop and interact with the businesses, the restaurants, get into their homes if they live there. And also they need to be safe so that people who aren't using cars can safely move around and enjoy everything that is on that street for them to enjoy. A road, he says, is more like a highway. You think of a road as it's trying to get you from point A to point B as quickly as possible. So if you think of a highway, you know, direction of traffic is separated on different sides. There are lots of lanes. There are very few impediments in the way, and it's designed to create a very fast moving flow of traffic. A strode, Marone would say, is the worst of both worlds. So you have lots of commercial development, lots of people walking around, and lots of cars moving high speed, and lots of lanes, and lots of opportunities for the pedestrians and the drivers to have potentially really dangerous collisions.
All of that sounds terrible, and you don't have to be like a devoted walker to recognize that. What were traffic engineers and civil engineers and city planners thinking about all over the country when they put these strodes in place? Was it about efficiency?
Yeah, it was about efficiency, and it still is. And I should say, you know, this isn't to villainize traffic engineers or planners. I think a lot of this was done with good intentions at heart. You know, after these roads were built up, there were really terrible traffic jams. And of course, some of those traffic jams still exist to this day. We know that we've all sat in them. We all continue to sit in them. So the sense was, okay, there's this standstill on these roads for an hour or two at rush hour every day. Let's add some lanes to the road, right? We'll add some lanes, we'll ease up the flow of traffic, more cars can move through more quickly. It's a very intuitive concept. Unfortunately, there's this thing called induced demand, where if you add more lanes to a road, there have been these studies that show people tend to feel more free to take trips and travel more. And so what you end up happening is, let's say you add a sixth lane to the highway, then at rush hour, it's all six lanes that are completely full and everyone's still in a traffic jam. So people will sort of travel more the more convenient it gets, and then you end up with the same problem you started with. So we've been doing it backwards for many years, and now a lot of people are starting to rethink, okay, maybe just adding more lanes isn't how we do this. How can we create different options for people so that they're not necessarily going to be stuck in their cars on these roads for hours on end?
Maren, another big difference between maybe the U.S. and other parts of the world, as you mentioned earlier, is that we like enormous vehicles. And we're not talking here just about like semis on the freeway carrying merchandise around. We're talking about outsized vehicles, cars and vans that we use for day-to-day driving. Why are SUVs and pickup trucks and other large passenger vehicles so bad for people on foot compared to smaller cars?
Yeah, that's a great question. They are larger. They tend to create larger blind spots. They are also heavier. And it's even, this is kind of an awful thing to think about. The way that they strike a pedestrian is much more deadly than the way a small car would. So if you have, say, like a sedan or a smaller vehicle, if it hits someone, it's going to tend to strike in the legs, right? Or lower on the body. A larger vehicle where the hood is very high raised, the vehicle is very high off the ground, is going to tend to hit someone in the chest or the head. And chest and head injuries are much more dangerous to the human body and tend to be much more fatal. So when you combine those three things, and particularly the fact that there are bigger blind spots, and that the vehicles are heavier, you create a much deadlier situation for pedestrians than you would have with smaller cars. And I'm sure you've noticed this over the last 20 years or so. The American market has really turned towards large SUVs and trucks, and these smaller vehicles are becoming less and less popular.
It's funny, I noticed that because I happen to have a smaller vehicle. I'll confess I wasn't necessarily thinking about pedestrian safety when I bought it, but my kids grew up and I needed a smaller car. And I just find it hard to see around other traffic. And I can understand why many people prefer a larger, higher vehicle as drivers. I mean, the experience feels better if you're behind the wheel.
Right. And so I think there's this debate. Well, is it just that Americans love big cars, or is this what the auto industry is selling us? I think it is probably both, but I think one of the reasons that it's both is that you feel safer in a larger vehicle because you and your family are probably going to be safer, right? If everyone is driving a massive vehicle, sometimes I drive a small car too. And sometimes it can be a little scary, right? You're in this tiny little car and everyone's driving this sort of behemoth vehicle. If you have a family, I think it's an arms race, right? To get a bigger vehicle so that you're not the only one, driving a small vehicle on the road. I think it makes a ton of sense. And the other thing is, you mentioned not being super concerned about pedestrians or thinking about pedestrian safety when you bought it. That's because, currently we don't include anything about pedestrian safety in the safety ratings for vehicles. So if you buy a 5-star safe vehicle, right, that does not take into account at all how safe it is for people outside of the vehicle. And that's been one of the big fights as this pedestrian fatality crisis has risen, to get the government to consider pedestrians and people outside of vehicles when giving safety ratings to cars.
Just to clarify, it's not that I don't care about pedestrian safety. It just wasn't it wasn't something I was thinking about as I was selecting a vehicle.
Understandable, yeah. And it is, I mean, I do think we would all be thinking about it a little bit more if it were included in the safety ratings.
Well, for sure. And what's interesting to me, I actually do a lot of walking when I'm not in my car, so I'm aware of these things. So you note that last year or this year, for the first time, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says, okay, we're going to look at how safe particular vehicles are for people who are outside those vehicles. But what they're not doing is having any effect on that, like, 5-star safety rating that we hear about in the car ads on TV.
That's exactly right. So this has been an issue. Safety advocates, mayors of cities, all sorts of people have been begging the government, please, please consider people. In the European safety ratings, they do consider pedestrians and people outside the vehicle. We're not doing this. Why are we years behind? And so finally, after all of these sort of public comment periods where people wrote in and begged them to consider pedestrians, they said earlier this year, okay, we will consider pedestrian safety. We're not going to include it in the overall safety rating. If you want to know about it, you can go to the website and look up how your car is for pedestrians. So it's not moving nearly as quickly as I think many people would like to see, given the scale of the crisis and just how many deaths we've had since, 2010 alone.
It does feel like the kind of thing that needs some kind of awareness campaign behind it, because nobody imagines themselves hitting a pedestrian, right? When you're buying a car, you might think about, what if I get in a crash, and where are the crumple zones in this vehicle? But you don't imagine yourself being the one to cause a pedestrian accident.
Yeah, I think that's right. And this is another problem too, and there's all sorts of research behind it, is we all think that we're the safe drivers.
Right.
We all think we're great drivers. We all think we're better than those other crazy people on the road, right? It's something that probably there's no one out there who's like, well, I'm a terrible driver. I'm endangering everyone I know. So yeah, it is a problem. I think it's a bit of a hot button issue in this space because for a long time the focus has been on, well, just tell drivers to drive safer. That hasn't worked too well. I think we need to, personally, I think we need to encourage a culture of safety and care for each other when we're on the road. I do think that should be a part of it. It should be coupled with, systems in place that make it harder for people to hit pedestrians and for them to suffer fatalities when it does happen. I think it all needs to happen sort of in tandem. But I do think there is something to this idea. You know, the pandemic, it felt like people just got a little bit more reckless during that time. And again, there's no specific data behind that, but there is some self-reporting of people who were driving during that time. Some people admitted that they were driving faster, and that they were intentionally breaking laws because they knew they could, because the streets were emptier. So that is a problem that we need to deal with.
When you talk about making modifications to vehicle body designs so that they are somewhat safer in the event that a vehicle strikes a pedestrian, I mean, in my mind, I imagine a Fiat with pool noodles on the bumpers. What are we talking about here? What can be done to the body of a car that makes it less likely to seriously hurt someone?
Okay, so let's talk about what we are doing first. Let's talk about the realm of the possible and then, or the realm of the likely, and then we'll talk about what isn't happening yet, but what could be done. So what is happening is that the government has mandated some automated braking systems for pedestrians to come out in all new cars in, I believe, 2027. So that is a start, you know. That technology has the power to save lives. I do think it will save lives. I based on the estimates of how many lives it'll save, it's a few hundred. If we're having 7,500 deaths a year and rising, that's not nearly enough, but it is something. So there is technology, and I think a lot of the focus is on the technology and how we can improve the technology. You know, the other things that we're not talking about less, or that we're not talking about as much, excuse me, are making the car smaller, making the hoods lower, designing cars so that those sort of blind spots that are caused on the sides of the vehicles, the sort of front sides, where, you know, you have the windshield and you have sort of the sides that are blocked off, and often people are turning. That's when those accidents will happen because they don't see fully through their windshield. You could move those and make it more visible so that you can see around corners better. But it really is, I mean, if a car is a little bit smaller and a little bit lower to the ground, you can make a big difference in terms of blind spots. And it could be the difference between seeing someone or not. There is, I should say, Chris, no movement right now that is talking seriously about making vehicles smaller. We are just not there as a culture. We're not there. The industry certainly isn't there. And I don't quite know what it would take for us to get there, but we're not there yet.
So for now, the best we can hope for is to maybe prevent those accidents from happening in the first place with modifications.
I think that, yeah, I mean, there is promise in the technology. It is not the only thing. You know, the other big thing is road design. If you can create road design to slow, like if a road is narrow and sort of trickier to drive, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but it's more interesting, right? It's more engaging, versus if you're sitting in traffic, going straight, stopping at a stoplight, going straight, stopping at a stoplight. You see a lot of people checking their phones, which, you know, whenever I write about this, people will write to me and say, "You're not talking about cell phones." It's obviously the biggest thing, right? Because what happened between 2010 and now is cell phones became ever more ubiquitous. But you know what? Other countries have cell phones too. They don't have this spike in the fatality rates that we're seeing, which leads me to believe that it can't just be the cell phones. And it might have something to do with the fact that if you're driving in, for example, certain European countries, the roads often demand that you pay attention, right? So there are little things you can do with road design that demand that you pay attention, and also make driving a little bit less boring. So that is something that can be done as well.
We've done a couple of shows about, Teslas in that autopilot mode being not quite ready for prime time. Do you have any information on whether the shift to more semi-autonomous vehicles on the road is contributing to pedestrian deaths?
So not in any meaningful sense. There has been a ton of reporting on it, and I think that reporting is important, right? Because it is a new technology that holds a lot of promise. But they're just still so rare. And there have been accidents, and I'm sure you've probably both seen and covered some of the accidents that have happened. But they are still such a fraction of the, such a small fraction of the vehicles on the road. I've been looking mostly at what is driving the current crisis. I would hope that the increased scrutiny on these vehicles makes them safer before we get further with them, because it would be adding on to a problem that is already out of control with the current vehicle fleet that we have.
It seems to me that one more argument in favor of making more smaller cars is one we haven't really touched on. You know, you mentioned that those SUVs hit people at a different spot, maybe more in the center of the body. We're talking about, I mean, I hate to even talk about this. We're talking about adult bodies there. Children's bodies are even more vulnerable.
Yeah, that's the thing that is, I think, particularly hard to think about and talk about, but potentially could help inspire people to take this issue seriously. I spent most of last year getting to know a mother who had lost her five-year-old little girl who was run over by a truck who didn't apparently see her as she was crossing the road with her dad on her bike. It's a horrible thing. Those vehicles are so tall that the risk that you wouldn't see a child at all is very real. Certain things like a backup cam, you know, can be really helpful in that regard. You know, if they mandated more cameras on other parts of the vehicle, but, you know, we are talking about the fact that these vehicles are just, they just have risks and dangers that, the smaller vehicles don't. And that is especially true for children. And, you know, there are lots of vehicles where even adult people who are on the shorter side don't clear the top of the hood. So I think, you know, until we address that problem, I think that you're going to see some of these deaths that just come from people not being seen.
We should talk about this, Maren. I mean, many U.S. drivers behave as if pedestrians are irritants, right? As if public thoroughfares belong exclusively to people who are operating motor vehicles. Is there some way to change the culture to make drivers think differently about pedestrians and cyclists sharing the road?
Yeah, it's a great question. I hope so. I hope that there can be a sort of cultural movement to encourage us. And I think that this is, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but I think it's a part of a general sort of fraying of the social fabric that we don't see each other as neighbors necessarily, right? Or people that we're connected with in a community. And I think there's something, you hear it on the internet, it's referred to as car brain. It's also, there's something called windshield bias, this idea that when you get behind the wheel, and partly this is because the infrastructure is in this country primarily designed for you, the roads, right, are often built for you to go as fast as possible, you start to see everyone in your way as an inconvenience, whether it's the driver who's going a little too slow, or it's the cyclist who is, you know, riding in the lane, or it's the person trying to cross the street. And there becomes this almost sort of, I think, antisocial instinct we feel, right? We are separated from the environment. We're in the comfort of our car. It's a very personal space. We're sort of blocked off from everyone else. If you're on the street, meanwhile, and I'm sure everyone can relate to this, you've been trying to cross the street and someone blows past, even though you have the crosswalk, and you know, you feel that much more intensely, and you feel the threat to your safety more intensely, right? So if we can find some way to just encourage people to sort of think about their own behavior behind the wheel. I know since I started reporting on this, it's something I think about a lot when I drive. I think about how can I be, you know, the type of driver who isn't just concerned with themselves and trying to get somewhere as fast as possible. I think about it with cycling too, right? I think, how can I be the type of cyclist that drivers don't roll their eyes at? How can I be like a better member of my mobile community here? Because we all have a role to play. I wish we were all thinking about it. I know we're not, but I think it would be helpful.
This might sound ridiculous, but there have been times when I've resorted to like loving kindness meditation when I'm really irritated in traffic. Like wishing the best for people suddenly changes my sense of them as just in my way.
Yeah, I think it's a very helpful way to do it. And you know, I was listening to a program the other day where people were talking about, you know, what do you do as a cyclist when someone tries to get really aggressive with you? And it's like, if you can find ways to just sort of disarm, you know, oftentimes they drive off before you've had an opportunity, right, to interact at all. But if you can find ways to just indicate to them that you're another person on the road, maybe you can have a shared moment of humanity. Unfortunately, you know, driving doesn't really lend itself well to that. It's designed to get us from point A to point B as conveniently as possible, and you're just cut off. But yeah, I wish more people thought about that stuff. I think it would go a long way. And again, you talked about, in other places where you go, there's a sense that you have to defer to the pedestrian. I think if we really centered pedestrian safety, and put a pedestrians first culture in place in this country and really encouraged it, and our leadership encouraged it, I do think that that would be helpful. We are all pedestrians at some point or another, hopefully.
Maren, we've been talking about a lot of problems here. Let's talk about some of the solutions. What can urban planners do to try and create spaces that work reasonably well for motorists and also are not deadly for cyclists and pedestrians?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a lot of things that you can do with roads, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a multi-million dollar overhaul, right? There are simple things. One thing that I've been hearing from some people in the transportation and planning world that I think is really intriguing is making streets around schools more pedestrian friendly, or even closing streets around schools at times. Allowing people to pick up their kids without, being fearful that they're going to get run over in a crosswalk. There's a lot you can do, and just sort of, we have slower speeds around schools, but actually closing a block of a road so that people can pick up their kids and not worry about it. Certainly protected bike lanes are very helpful. And then there are all sorts of like smaller things you can do. You can add these curb bump outs, which increase visibility and protection for pedestrians when they're trying to cross. In my neighborhood, they've done some curb bump outs where they have local artists paint murals in the bump out. So it's not, it is beautiful. I mean, that's a part of it, but it's also visually eye-catching. It's not all just sort of gray, in a way that makes you sort of go into autopilot, as we all, I think, often do in cars. Adding roundabouts, adding sort of subtle curves in the road. I think the biggest thing is not just assuming every time that adding another lane is going to help make things better. I think we've sort of come around on that. There's a better understanding now that adding more lanes doesn't necessarily help. So those are just a few of the things that can be done in cities. And I guess the other big thing, which we haven't really talked about, but which is huge, is adding more transportation options so that people don't necessarily feel the need to get in their cars all the time. By the way, the more people who take those other transit options are actually freeing up space on the road for the people who do need to take their cars. So it should be a win-win situation.
Well, you mentioned that, adding more car lanes and making them wider is not necessarily a solution to traffic congestion. What do we know about what happens when you narrow car lanes on established roads or remove them to make bike lanes or pedestrian lanes?
Oh, it's such a good question. Okay, so we don't have a ton of great evidence about what happens when you remove the lanes, particularly on arterial roads, because it almost never happens. And I remember when I was doing that Deadliest Road story, it was in Florida, and I was speaking to the Florida Department of Transportation officials. And I said, have you guys ever, because I noticed while driving, there did not need to be that many lanes. I never saw it super busy. And I said, have you ever considered removing a lane? And they just sort of looked at me like, what? Removing a lane? We would never remove a lane. They said it had never been discussed to their knowledge. So certainly in a city, when you talk about removing lanes, as I'm sure you know, it is a very controversial thing to do. And people do tend to get upset, even just by the addition of a bike lane can cause a lot of unhappiness in the community. So, and I, this isn't to say that those pain points aren't real and that people don't, if people experience less parking, they're often very upset about that. Those changes are real. I think oftentimes they're necessary. I haven't seen any evidence that, narrowing a road or adding a bike lane has ruined anything. A lot of the times you hear business owners complaining that it'll ruin their business because people can't pull right up and park. But what you see is that actually they get a ton of new customers who are pedestrians or who are on their bikes So those things do tend to come out in the wash. But it is a very, it's very contentious, you know, it's always very contentious.
Depending on where you live in the country, roundabouts are very contentious too. People are starting to talk more about these. How are they supposed to work?
Yeah, so they are supposed to slow down and smooth out traffic, right? So they are supposed to be a safety measure that can keep the flow of traffic going, maybe in places where there isn't necessarily a need for an entire stop. But you know, the downside of them is that they can be very confusing, particularly if you're new to an area. And if you're used to going fast and you want to just go, 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 go. You know, a roundabout is a real challenge and a conundrum, so people don't always love them. And I think that is part of why they're controversial. They're certainly, you know, they're a part of the landscape of Washington, D.C., where I live, and some other cities, but I haven't seen as many of them being added as a sort of traffic calming measure, even though it is one tool in the toolkit for doing that.
What does it take to create a system of crosswalks that actually work as crosswalks?
Great question. I think what it takes is one, looking at where people are crossing, paying close attention to, you know, we do a lot of the establishment of road speed rules by looking at how roads or how cars are behaving on the roads, right? So if we notice that cars are driving a certain speed on a road, we tend to set the speed limit based on how cars are driving. We could do a lot more by looking at how people are walking and getting around and building the crosswalks around them. The ways to make them safer include raising them, adding those sort of flashing lights that you discussed, adding red lights that you discussed for them to be able to cross. But I think also the big thing is just putting them in places where people are running across the road. So in that road I wrote about in Florida last year, people were being forced to cross because it was either take a chance on your life and run across the road here, or you walk a mile and a half. A lot of people, particularly if they have mobility issues, are not going to walk that extra mile and a half just to find a crosswalk. They could be a lot more intuitive in that way.
Yeah, it's also interesting that so many motorists seem to treat crosswalks as like a suggestion, but not really even a serious suggestion. They might see someone in a crosswalk and still assume that person is in their way and they better hurry up and get out of the road.
That does seem to be the assumption, and it's one I'm sort of baffled by. Like, is there not a common culture or common language in this country of you're supposed to wait, you're supposed to stop at the crosswalk and wait for the pedestrian if the pedestrian is standing there? I mean, I do think one part of it is that, you know, we talked a little bit about when you're sort of in your car, you're in this bubble. A lot of times people will drive by and not even appear to see the person in the crosswalk, right? So yeah, I do think if we had some sort of national conversation about this is how you're supposed to behave when someone is waiting in a crosswalk. But this to me feels like it's part of this larger issue of like the things we agreed upon as a society feel like from tipping to everything else feel like they've just sort of fallen apart in the last few years, and we need to figure out how to rebuild some sense of consensus here. And I think it would make a difference in terms of road safety, but barring that, I think, you know, the infrastructure changes and the vehicle safety changes are going to be a lot more important.
I don't know if there's a comments function on these stories that you write, but I'm really curious about what you hear from people. Is it like split down the middle between people who think this stuff is important to consider and people who are furious that we're even talking about anything that might slow down motor traffic?
I would say 95% of the feedback has been really positive, and it's a big part of why I've been writing about this so much because I care about it so much, and I've just been flabbergasted to see that everyone else seems to care about it too. You know what? I think it is that people have noticed that something's going on, and they're looking for a language to sort of discuss what is happening and why it's happening, and they're happy to see the media paying attention to it. I will say, you know, 5% of it is people who will send me messages like, well, you know, this is the United States and the driver always comes first, and pedestrians need to watch what they're doing too, and sometimes they're at fault. And I do take the time to engage because I think that is it is a dominant mode of thought in this country, and I try to, you know, reach out and explain why maybe that's a problem. Maybe that's contributing to the issue that we have in this country with pedestrian safety. Those people are definitely out there. But I've been surprised by how many people seem to see it and get it and really care about it.
To the point of the folks who write to you and say, well, this is the United States, this is the system we have, we need to just get used to it. Anybody who has visited the Netherlands, I mean, you can't help escaping that it's kind of a walkers and cyclists paradise. It's worth noting this hasn't been true from the beginning, right? Something really radical took place starting in about 1970.
Yeah, I think this is a really important story because, and it's the Netherlands, but there are stories like this in other countries too. Just to give you an example, in France in the 70s, you were just as likely to die in a car crash as you are in the United States in the 70s. Today, you are three times more likely to die in a car crash here than you are in France. So, people talk a lot about the differences in infrastructure and the changes, and there are major differences, but there is a lot of room for improvement on our end. So let me tell you about the Netherlands in 1970, because that's what you asked about. The country, like a lot of European countries in that time, and like the US, was really just sort of overrun by cars. They were everywhere. Pedestrian fatality rates, like they were in much of Europe and in the US, were soaring. In 1971, I think it was, 3,300 people were killed, more than 400 of them children. So when you look at those numbers, that's about 3,300 people, is about half of our pedestrian fatalities for last year. But that's in the Netherlands, so the population is smaller. So 400 children died that year. The public was incensed, they were outraged. They started a movement called Stop de Kindermoord, which translates to Stop the Child Murder. They staged large protests. They would ride their bikes to the government buildings and lie down in front of them. And government officials noticed it was effective. They started adding bike lanes. They started adding car-free days where they encouraged everyone to take a day off from their car. This is also around the time of the oil crisis, so there was a couple of different things at work there. But it really set off this process where it totally transformed the infrastructure of the country, and today it is one of the safest countries for pedestrians on earth. So they clearly hit a limit. It became a political priority. There was a movement to change, and it worked. So that gives me some sense of hope that it is possible here. We don't have to accept that, well, this is just America. This is just the way it is.
I love the story, Maren, and I hate to think of myself as a cynic, but it also occurs to me that the Netherlands is not a country with a very powerful petroleum industry or a very powerful automotive industry that would lobby hard against any kinds of changes.
I think that's right. And I think that we should not discount that or underestimate. I think, especially when you look at how slow we have been to get on board with regulations that have been the standard in Europe for several years now, I think you can look to the influence of those industries as a reason why. I think, on the other hand, there hasn't been a sort of public prioritization of this issue. And, responsibility, I think, should fall with leaders. But the reality of leadership, particularly in this country, I think, is that our political leaders lead from behind. They tend to wait until there's a lot of, people who care about an issue and are angry about an issue. And once there is, then they tend to act. You're seeing a little bit of that happening with lawmakers, particularly on the local level, some in Congress. But I think there is room to do a lot more. And I do think, you've had this movement, Families for Safe Streets, that has formed. It was the mother of a young boy who was killed in New York City about 10 years ago. And they have really established themselves in short order as a leading organization advocating for pedestrian safety. They're starting to make a big difference already, and I expect that movement to grow. Now, the question is, how many deaths are we willing to tolerate before we get to the point where we're willing to make these big changes? I don't know, but I do have some faith in them to raise awareness and make some change.
As we wait for this change, maybe work for this change, depending on how we feel about this, has your reporting revealed to you any strategies for moving through the world more safely as a pedestrian, despite the conditions that currently exist?
That's a great question. I mean, I think of it much more in terms of what I can do as a driver, because I do think that the onus should be on the drivers. You know, if you're walking around, you're a pedestrian, you're pretty vulnerable, and you're generally aware of your vulnerability. Some people, I mean, you know, we all make mistakes, we're all human, but you tend to be aware of it. If you're driving a car, you're operating 1.5 to 2 tons of steel, and I think it comes with a much greater responsibility.
Maren Kogan is senior correspondent at Vox, where you can find her report, Why Pedestrian Deaths in the U.S. Are at a 40-Year High. Maren, thanks for making time to talk about this. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.